Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. We're used to hearing about the opioid crisis, but lately there's renewed attention to what some call the pain crisis. An estimated 50 million Americans suffer from pain, 19 million with what's defined as high-impact chronic pain. And yet the way we treat pain is often criticized as haphazard, expensive, stigmatizing, and ineffective. Now a federal task force calls for a better national strategy on pain management. It advocates a broad, multidisciplinary approach toward pain, one that includes medications, but also physical therapy, massage, medical devices, acupuncture, meditation, psychological counseling, and more. Today in The Exchange, how to improve pain management in America. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Our guest for the hour is Dr. David Nagel. He's a physiatrist and pain management specialist practicing in Concord. He's also the author of Needless Suffering, How Society Fails Those with Chronic Pain. And Dr. Nagel, it's always nice to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
I want to let listeners know we are going to bring in several other voices this hour, other physicians, also some folks from the insurance sector. So that'll be coming up a little bit later. Dr. Nagel, what is the central problem with the way that we treat pain in this country?
Well, that's a great question. I think you really nailed everything in your intro. But I think what I wrote about in my book to begin with was how we as a culture treat people with pain. We look at it as a character flaw, something we stigmatize. And our attitudes, our behaviors towards these people can really do a lot of harm in a lot of ways. They're excluded from the medical community, the workplace. Insurers frequently don't cover a lot of the things that they need. Just this whole way of public policy and dealing with what people have chosen to call the opioid crisis has really harmed a lot of people. So in the end, you know, the draft that we're talking about today, that was their big focus throughout the entire thing, was stigmatization. The other big focus that they had was, we look at chronic pain as a symptom. And again, the draft looked at kind of acute and chronic pain. The focus clearly, though, was chronic pain. And we've always thought of pain as a symptom, but when we're looking at it as chronic, it's a lot different. It's transformed its own disease process. And when we look at chronic diseases, whether it's, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, or whatever, we look at a broader way of dealing with the problem, how you're going to live with something you're going to have the rest of your life. So we look at all focuses of your life, you know, the biological, the psychological, the social, the spiritual, and that requires a complex way of interacting with a human being. We don't do that at all. And
when you say we, you mean doctors.
Everybody. I don't think it's just doctors. Like, for example, when we were talking off air earlier, I said they'll pay for me to inject people's spines or various parts of their bodies, even though there's not a lot of great evidence that that works.
But because it's medicine.
Correct.
It'll be covered by insurers. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm as a physiatrist, we deal with function. That's our whole focus. And so whether it's a chronic disability of some sort, stroke, head injury, whatever, you know, we deal with function. We're not doing that. You know, we're dealing with a problem that we don't have a universal understanding of. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I understand what chronic pain is. The whole neurophysiology about it is very complex. we don't have a universal solution. There is no magic bullet.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting to me about this draft report is it seems to acknowledge it's not enough to send people home with a bottle of pills or right. give people an injection of some kind of, you know, liquid medication at the source of the pain. This draft report really does seem to say it's really big and really complicated, and we, meaning doctors and insurers and patients, need to look at this holistically and broadly.
Exactly. And you know what's bothering? I mean, I'm learning about the political process in a really weird way, but this is not the first draft that's attempted to do this. This issue's been going on. I mean, the Pain Care Policy Act was passed in 2010. The first draft of that was 12 years before that. And throughout that entire period of time, so we're looking at since 1998, people have been looking at changing the focus from an injection, a pill, a surgery, to a broader perspective. And so it's kind of frustrating that it's taken this long to get to this point. We're talking 20 years.
Is it the opioid crisis, Dr. Nagel, that has finally sort of catapulted this into we need to get serious about this now?
In a weird kind of way, yeah. You know, I got involved in policymaking regarding this issue back in the 1980s. And the reason we got involved then was because we weren't prescribing enough opioids. We didn't understand pain. We didn't understand what we didn't know. Also, there were so many questions that we didn't have answers for, but we weren't using the tools that we had. We recommended a set of guidelines back in 1998 that would have encouraged responsible opioid prescribing, but also to look past that at other things, you know, that we can do. I'm an acupuncturist as well. I've always believed in, you know, psychological therapies, things like that. But I always believed that they needed to work together in a coordinated fashion. The next question is, well, how do you improve access? The whole issue of healthcare reform is access. So how do we improve access for people with complex pain who don't have high incomes to all of these therapies?
Well, and like I said, we'll talk to a couple insurers later about that, how they decide what to pay for and what not to pay for, how they know whether something really is going to work or not. I mean, you don't want to throw money at every, you know, treatment that comes down the street.
I would argue we're already doing that. And one of the neatest statements in the National Pain Strategy, which preceded this document that was released in 2016, was the amount of money that we spend on invasive therapies that have no evidence base.
And that don't work.
And don't work. And maybe work short term, but provide a long term problem. And we don't know what that means, you know, what's involved with that. And the National Pain Strategy was basically a request to go out and collect data on six different issues. That being one of them, what works, what doesn't. You mentioned a bunch of numbers when we started. Nobody really knows what those numbers are. They're a constantly moving target. So they looked at, like, how do we figure out how many people in the United States are affected by this? What's the real cost of that? Things like that. The other thing that I'm mostly interested in is disparity. It's the difference between the care you get is dramatic, whether you're black, white, male, female, pregnant, whatever. And how do we assess that and figure
sure.
all that out?
Well, and I was looking at a lot of the suggestions in this report, and, you know, there's a lot in here. Acupuncture, mm-hmm. aquatherapy, massage therapy, physical therapy. It all sounds great, but, you know, $50 a pop, $75 a pop, $100 a pop. You know, you start talking real dollars there. I want to pick up on something you said a moment ago. You said you started practicing and looking at this in the 80s. How are doctors and healthcare providers, Dr. Nagel, taught about pain in their training? Is it comprehensive? What's lacking? Because you talked about stigma, so it makes me think, okay, where is that stigma learned?
I think the stigma started in the early 1900s. And I don't really know the history of pain management prior to 1875, so I can't go back prior to that. But I do know that after a thing called the Harrison Act was passed, that functionally made, I mean, there was an opioid crisis, and one could argue there's been a number of opioid crises over the centuries.
It's I'm not talking about your own training and how you see doctors being trained today.
This was already part of the problem back when I started, was that we were taught pain was a character flaw, that sent him off to the psychologist, there's nothing we can do for it. One of our surgeons that taught us about pain said they either need to lose weight or have surgery, which is absolutely insane, but that's what we were taught.
Wait, you were taught pain was a character flaw?
Yep. In so many words. And my mentor, George Engel, who's the father of the biopsychosocial approach, looked at it from a Freudian perspective and looked at all of the psychoanalytic issues, problems with relationships, things like that, to try to explain chronic pain as a purely psychological event. And whether that's true or not, I mean, that's another story. He was my hero and all that other kind of stuff, but I do think that he was wrong and right about that. The problem then is that that attitude gets ingrained in the training, and the last study that was done a couple years ago by Johns Hopkins showed that the average doctor gets 4 hours of training about pain management in his training.
4 hours of training in pain management?
And veterinarians get 7. So we're number 2 next to veterinarians. And I don't know what dentists get, but it's pretty sad when you consider that the most common reason people go to a doctor is pain.
Dr. Nagel, I want to bring another voice into our conversation and also remind our listeners that we'd love to hear from you. We're digging into a new national strategy for managing pain. Now, this is a draft report, but it is big. It says, while the risks of opioid use are now well known, finding and funding better alternatives is still incredibly difficult. We're unpacking that this hour. We'd love to hear from you, your own experiences with managing pain, acute or chronic. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Joining us now by phone is Dr. Jeremy Collins. He's a pain specialist at Granite State Pain Associates and former principal dancer with the American Ballet Theater. And Dr. Collins, it's really nice to have you. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to ask you about that background as a ballet dancer and how it informs the way you treat pain today.
Well, like Dr. Nagel, I'm also a physiatrist. So a physiatrist focuses on recovery of function. And there's this premise that a physiatrist believes that everything can be cured with exercise. And we say that in a tongue-in-cheek manner, but there's a great deal of truth to that. So my background as a ballet dancer really taught me how the human body performs from a physiologic standpoint. And I can see chronic pain as a developmental process that occurs because people really don't use their bodies the way they were designed. So what I try to do as part of a multimodal approach to my pain management practice is get people aware of how to improve the way they use their bodies so they have less of a deleterious effect of their activities of daily living and how that impacts their physiology so that they live better, they live healthier, and they live less painful.
You know, that's so interesting that you say that, Dr. Collins, and it reminds me of something that jumped out at me from this report, and there's so much in here, but it encourages, I'm saying doctors, but, you know, everybody involved with patients, it encourages people to work with patients on movement post-pain, talking about how after an extremely painful event, people kind of clamp down in their bodies, and then they're afraid to move, and that just makes the pain worse and hurts the possibilities for recovery. So it's real interesting to hear you say that. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, so often we have patients who have been injured and they use their bodies in a very protective manner. And they do that because they don't want to re-injure themselves and they are protective of the areas of their body that they've hurt. And unfortunately, what that does is that just simply reinforces their problem. And you, the challenge as a physician is to encourage a patient to recognize this and to make a positive change in dealing with it. And the best way to approach that is retraining how to use your body. And what I advocate for is I advocate all my patients have a daily yoga regimen. The yoga regimen that I advocate for is called Vini Yoga. And it is a discipline of yoga. I call it yoga for the rest of us because it doesn't require you to twist yourself into a pretzel, which is the first thing that comes to mind when many people hear the word yoga. They think of advanced practitioners who have amazing poses and contort their physiologies in ways that are simply unrealistic for them.
Yeah, they say that's not for me.
Yes, sure. And, you know, if you don't get buy-in from a patient, then you're not going to be able to create a positive change. So I advocate for this very specific kind of yoga. It's very gentle. It's very in tune with your body's natural physiology. It encourages strengthening the muscles that support your spine and improving areas of your body that are weak, and not overusing areas of your body that are compensating for areas of weakness. And the idea is that if you practice a daily yoga regimen, you're going to have carryover into the rest of your day, so that your activities of daily living, like driving or typing or reaching for that bottle of milk at the back of the refrigerator, all of those activities you do with a different body awareness.
And Dr. Collins, yeah, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt because I really got to ask you this. So, and I hear you, and people listening may think, yeah, that's great. But when somebody comes to you in, you know, acute pain, you know, they want relief now. They don't want you to, you know, they probably don't want to hear you say, you know, you need to start practicing yoga and in 3 weeks you'll start feeling better. So how do you help people through that, Dr. Collins, where, yes, ultimately the yoga and the movement and the strengthening will help, but like right here, right now, I can't move.
Right. Well, exactly. First things first. And so you want to provide them with medications that will help relieve their pain, that will allow them to be active and physical. And you also want to get the patient to understand that they really are the source of their own improvement, of their own healing process, and get them in touch with that notion, because that notion, I think, is lost in a lot of people. People have given up because they've been injured for so long. They have abandoned the concept that they can be the source of their own improvement. So you need to be very calm and take a long-term approach and understand that, you know, this is a process, and it's taken a long time for a patient to get to the point where they have come to me and they're sitting in the chair in front of me. And thus it's going to take a long time for that process to unwind itself. And it's a daunting task, but it's something that everybody is able to embrace. And it's just a question of getting the patients to understand that they are really the source of their own improvement. Now, in terms of what are you going to do for me right now? I'm in horrible pain.
Right.
Well, you know, frontline medications have been opiate medical therapy for a long period of time, and that's getting very difficult for someone to gain access to. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why I want to thank Dr. Nagel and all the work that he's done on this behalf, you know, advocating for patients in this way on this subject is something that's quite daunting and takes a great deal of perseverance these days. And I want to thank him for the work that he's done.
In other words, you know, opioids might not be, perhaps we've overprescribed, but don't, as Dr. Nagel has said, throw the baby out with the bathwater. They can be helpful for some patients in pain. Is that what you're saying, Dr. Collins?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I was just about to use that phrase. So and we're definitely on the same page in that regard. You know, overprescribing of opiate medications has taught us over years that there can definitely be pitfalls to that strategy, but that doesn't mean that it's a failed strategy. It just means that strategy needs to be reevaluated, and it needs to be applied in a manner that is more beneficial to the overall health of the patient, the overall well-being. Giving someone so much medication that they have become out of touch with their physiology, that they're completely disconnected from themselves in a physical sense,
that's not
that is
either.
Not a helpful thing. That's a harmful thing. And I think that we've learned that.
Dr. Collins, it's been really interesting talking to you, and having now jumped into this topic and this huge report, I'm thinking we need to follow up, but I'm going to let you go for now. We really appreciate your time. You know, we know you're busy.
Oh, thank you very much. And it's really been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. That's Dr. Bye. Jeremy Collins. He's a pain specialist at Granite State Pain Associates. And as we heard, a former principal dancer with the American Ballet Theater. Coming up, your questions and comments. And we'll talk to some insurers about coverage for pain relief. Stay with us. I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. Join me and a panel of experts in Nashua for a conversation on New Hampshire's opioid crisis. As part of NHPR's Crossroad Reporting Project, we take stock of where the state is now with this epidemic and what the future might be. Join us at the Nashua Public Library on February 7th at 6:30 p.m. Get your free tickets at nhpr.org/events.
This event is sponsored in part by Dartmouth Hitchcock.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a new national strategy for treating pain. We're hearing about a draft federal report calling for wider adoption of alternative, non-addictive therapies. Let's hear from you if you've struggled with acute or chronic pain. How did you manage it? Did your insurance cover it? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Dr. David Nagel is with us. He's a physiatrist and pain management specialist practicing in Concord. His book is Needless Suffering, How Society Fails Those with Chronic Pain. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Dr. Nagel, Linda in Hillsboro sent us an email. She says, I'm a massage therapist. With my experience, I see a very healthy network between massage therapists, physical therapists, and chiropractors, but not really with general practitioners of medicine. Linda says, I feel there is a communication barrier for people knowing about different means of pain management. I hear about people in bad muscle pain going to the ER to be sent home with pain meds, maybe referral to physical therapy. There are many stories of folks coming in really frustrated about this referral cycle of healthcare for pain management. It's a rabbit hole sometimes. Linda, thank you so much. And Dr. Nagel, I know you've got some thoughts there.
Oh, I sure do. We actually had a meeting at the Board of Pharmacy talking about pharmacists' frustrations with the same thing. And I think what this model that they're proposing in the draft is looking at is creating a complex, integrative, multidisciplinary pain network, where we're all important. And I've always envisioned the world of pain very biblically as a house with many rooms and everybody's got a place. What this draft says very specifically is that model only works if people communicate with each other. The other thing that is not really in the draft, but it's the thing that we're all thinking about, is how do we empower people like you to have more control over the care of the patient? Because right now, if you look at the definition of complementary alternative in this draft that's created by the NIH, it functionally means that if you go to an MD or a DO or a dentist, that's traditional medicine. If you go to somebody out of that network, then it's alternative. And that doesn't make any sense. And I work with NFL players, and I had a long discussion with a guy yesterday about how does he stay in tip-top shape to be able to play football when he's getting hurt every week.
Yeah, football players have a lot of pain.
Yeah, he was telling me a lot of it's mind-body in the sense that when he's miserable, he doesn't perform right. So he talked to me. We went over a number of the modalities that he uses to manage his pain, one of them being massage. He uses a lot of meditation. He also does another technique that's kind of a little bit out there, but, you know, he finds that it helps him, and I'd never actually even heard of it. It's kind of a modification of acupuncture without needles. And he's using all these other techniques, and he's basically self-managing, self-coordinating his own care.
And he's got plenty of money to do that.
Exactly. But,
and massage, and Linda, thank you so much. The draft report says massage can be very helpful. A very smart physical therapist who I saw for a while said she was absolutely convinced that, you know, regular massage would help people with their pain, lower their blood pressure, keep blood flow going. But a good massage is, you know, $70, $80, $90, $100. Yeah. And as far as I know, no insurance is covering massage.
Well, you know what's really neat about this whole topic? Like, we just had a global pain summit in Boston, and there was an entity called the Comprehensive Integrative Pain Management Congress that I'm a part of. Although, to be honest, I will explain to you why this is falling apart, but that's another story. But, you know, they're talking about how do you integrate all these services to provide, you know, multimodality treatment for patients. In the end, Dr. Collins was actually right. The goal is self-management. The Arthritis Foundation has been doing that forever. My wife was involved in creating self-management programs in the state of New Hampshire for people with chronic pain from arthritis. So, I mean, that is the eventual goal, is to try to get all these things available for people. We have a fixed medical pie, from what I've been told. I last heard we have a large federal budget deficit. I don't know if that's rumor or true, but that's what I've been told. healthcare occupies a large part of that. How do we shift dollars from one place to another? And that's where the discussion starts to get to in this thing, or in this draft. And that's really important, is that we function on money, and certain parts of the healthcare segment are getting a lot, other segments aren't getting any.
So pills, injections, surgeries, hospitalizations, that's where the money goes.
That's my perception.
And this draft report seems to be saying, whoa, 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 let's look a little bit bigger at this.
I mean, I wish we could have a little discussion with Dr. Collins about this point, but as a comprehensive integrative pain management specialist, I wasn't paid tremendously well. As a interventional pain specialist, I can drive any car I want. I mean, I just think there's something wrong with that model.
Let's take a call. Again, thank you for that email.
Thanks.
This is Debbie in Lowell. Hi, Debbie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. excuse me. Well, the problem I've had is I've had pain for many, many years for many different reasons. Quick examples, diagnosed with late-stage Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, arthritis, degenerative disc disease, all these fun things. Anyways, I have literally gotten injections in my spine, upper and lower. One of the injections that was given my lower spine, the side effect that I was unfortunate to have was that for about 12 hours, I couldn't feel or use my left leg at all.
Yikes.
Yes, that was fun. And that kind of, you know, and they weren't really helping. If they helped, it was for a very short amount of time, maybe a couple weeks. The most was like 3 months, and then I was back to dying in pain again. Because of all of this, I have been given medications, I don't know, anti-inflammatories, antidepressants.
So nothing seems to be working for you, Debbie.
Everything.
Is that what you're saying? Like, you've got all sorts of pain, and I'm so sorry. Pain is awful, and just seems like nothing's working for you. Is that your point?
Well, what was working? So it was a combination, because this was before anybody said, "Oh, we're going to send you to physical therapy," which was very short lived. So what they would do is the doctors would give me, I can't, so it's like Oxy, whatever. You know, one of the ones that everybody's saying, don't take it all anymore. And they would have me take that, and I would literally, they'd say, take like one every 4 to 6 hours. I would take, when the pain started, a half, and start stretching or do some type of exercise. And I was slowly getting my muscle tone back because I had lost quite a bit because of being in so much pain and not being able to do things. I haven't worked.
So, Debbie, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you just wrap up, please, and tell us sort of what the final thought is?
So I'm kind of desperate as to how I'm supposed to get help, because right now I'm not able to work, and the pain is severe. And I mean, the only thing that helps me somewhat is either an ice pack or a heating pad and not moving.
Well, Debbie, thank you for calling. And I'm really sorry to hear. It's awful. And I'm sure you meet people like this, Dr. Nagel. I've tried everything, you know, opioids, physical therapy, injections. Nothing's working.
Well,
and obviously you can't diagnose Debbie on the air,
yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm wondering if you see people like this. By the time they reach you, they've kind of run out of hope.
Well, when I had a full pain, And I will take a step back, because what she's bringing up are significant issues. It's really fun to talk about these issues abstractly, but when the rubber meets the road and people are struggling like she is, that's when it gets to be problematic. I do think that I hate to keep going back to the draft, but the whole purpose of this draft is to change the way we manage pain in the United States. This has been an ongoing process, again, for a very long period of time. Somebody like her has a complex biopsychosocial challenge and needs somebody. There's two elements that need to happen. Number one is she needs to have somebody that's invested in her care, whether it's a primary care doctor or a pain specialist. Secondly, there needs to be continuity of care. The big thing is that what we're seeing now is people, it sounds like she's shifting providers a lot. And I may be wrong about that, I don't know. But that's a big problem. And the third thing is that there needs to be less fragmentation. And by having continuity with one person, you can bring in these other resources. The next issue is, again, how do you pay for all these resources?
Well, right. And especially since she's not working.
And then the fourth thing, and that's another big issue that we've talked about for a while, is that in our society, work is part of who we are. You know, like when we define who we are, I'm a doctor, you're a talk show host, the best one in New Hampshire. But, you know, we're defined by what we do. And so when you take that away from somebody, you know, as Dr. Collins was saying earlier, I mean, there's a big mental element to that. How do we give people meaning to their life back? And doing a lot of the things that he was saying can be really helpful in a lot of ways. And I know I didn't solve your problems, but I just want to say that one thing you might want to do is review this draft, because it's in the public commentary phase, and that's the main reason I'm here, is to tell people this draft exists, and you have an opportunity to make a difference.
Yeah, well, Debbie, good luck, and I really I feel badly that you're struggling so much, and I really appreciate your call. Dr. Nagel, I want to bring someone else into our conversation. This is Dr. Adam Seidner. He's Chief Medical Officer at the Hartford Insurance Company. Dr. Seidner manages strategy and policy with a focus on workers' compensation and disability management. And Dr. Seidner, good to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Good to meet you.
Well, I've read that your workers' comp coverage takes a holistic approach toward pain, offering not just medication, but also mental health counseling, physical therapists, chiropractors, and so forth. When did you begin adopting and offering these pain management alternatives, and why?
So I started in medicine about 30 years ago, and really being here at the Hartford given me an opportunity to employ not just all the insights that they have, but also my clinical background as well. So really three main points is that increasingly the pain and opioid epidemic has created difficulties for employers and their work comp disability employee claims. The Hartford has developed a unique claim strategy. iRecover, which I'm happy to discuss, is one of those services. And then the Hartford's opioid management strategy really assists employers to retain their most valuable asset, and that's their employees.
So what was it that kind of pushed you guys to opening up your approach toward treating pain?
So basically it came from a couple of different perspectives, not just the medical science, as well as my clinical background, but the Hartford's data advantage. The Hartford has a huge data set, as you can imagine, millions and millions of claims over years. And so we can look at data and analyze it, and we have data scientists, and we're able to really understand when a claim wasn't recovering as it normally would. And then we would look back and say, okay, what is there? What's causing the individual to have this difficulty? And that's really where we realize that the multidisciplinary or integrative approach to their pain was really what was key and what was necessary.
That's interesting. So as a big insurance company, you had data that showed you some people just weren't getting back to work as quickly as you might expect. So you started looking at data that showed what helped them get back to work quickly.
And also what the areas were that were, you know, potentially causing them some difficulty. And that's where we decided that we needed to help the medical community with regard to managing these patients as well. So, you know, we found that, you know, a number of medical conditions, we used the term comorbidities, would impact how the claimant recovered. We would look at areas of anxiety, depression, passivity. We've talked about a little bit during the program, the previous folks talk about owning improvement, and that really is self-efficacy. Does that individual really feel that they can guide their own recovery? And if you're passive, and we have a model that we can identify someone with passive traits, then we can voluntarily, it's all voluntary for them, introduce them to an iRecover program where we have them paired with a health coach. And that health coach then would walk them through whatever areas that they need improvement with.
And oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. So comorbidity, you used that word earlier, just to let people know, that means sort of two or more health conditions going on at the same time, Dr. Seidner, right?
Correct. So it might be the person has a knee injury, but they also have obesity or diabetes or peripheral vascular disease. All of these are going to potentially impact that individual's ability to recover.
So they have a health coach. So, you know, if they start to fall off the wagon with their physical therapy exercises or their, you know, the mental health counseling that you might think they need. They've got a health coach right there saying, you know, get back with it. You can do this.
And give them the tools and educate them on those areas. But they'll also go even deeper. So our health coaches, and they are our health coaches that they start out with at the Hartford, they're all certified. And basically we'll look at everything, including their sleep. Because if individuals aren't sleeping well, that will also have a big impact on their ability to deal with pain. And so we go very deep into not just their functional abilities, what concerns they may have, you know, there's fear. We talked about earlier in your program, fear. We call it fear avoidance, so people don't want to move because if they do, it hurts. And there's other areas that we can also help with. And so getting people moving again, making sure they're adherent with their physical therapy, making sure, again, that they're sleeping and eating well, all helps with their recovery.
Well, and Dr. Snyder, this is really interesting. Here's a question that, a concern that I've heard from other insurance companies is, yes, we know we need other, you know, modalities to deal with pain besides, you know, a pill or an injection. But there's not a lot of great research on what really works, and we don't want to throw money at something that isn't going to work. And so I just wonder how you at the Hartford kind of sift through that.
Yeah, so there's a number of different value-based measures we can look at outcomes. And so there are a number of different ways that we, separate from the medical and scientific literature, look at this. And one of the biggest pieces that I'll start with is we have to understand that person's from beginning to end. So, you know, what do they believe? How do they think that they can either help themselves improve or what's going to help them? So just as an example, if we want them to go to physical therapy, that's fine. But if they don't think physical therapy is really the answer and they want to go to massage therapy, we need to take a different look at that and say, okay, you know, we're going to look more favorably maybe on the massage request and also make sure that we're looking at the outcomes, their improvement, their return to work, their decreased use of if they are using oral medications. All of that will be part of that value equation.
So it's kind of an open-mindedness, but also keeping track of the data. That sounds like your approach, Dr. Seidner.
Exactly. I mean, we just need to show value. And by looking at the fact that people are going to their appointments and are, you know, improving in their overall recovery and returning to work, because some of the folks are out of work, is really everything that needs to be looked at. So by having in workers' comp covering not just the medical costs, but also indemnity, meaning we replace their wages when they're out of work, you know, if we can get them back even to part-time light duty, it does a number of good things for them. Psychologically and socially, they're back in the environment that they want to be in.
Sure.
They're in a routine, getting up in the morning, going somewhere, doing something, and really having pride in being able to contribute.
Yeah, something Dr. Nagel said a moment ago. Dr. Seidner, thank you very much for taking time out of your morning for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Adam Seidner, Chief Medical Officer at the Hartford Insurance Company. Dr. Nagel, when we come back from a break, we've got another insurance company that I want to talk to, but I also have a couple more questions for you. And, of course, lots of questions from our listeners. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Dedicated listener Joanne Harden of Rye has included NHPR in her will and trust.
It may not be the biggest trust, but I want to be able to pay back what I feel I've received so the people coming after me will be able to enjoy that.
Leaving a gift to NHPR is an inspired way to support an organization that has enriched your life and that of others in your community. To learn more about including NHPR in your estate plans, go to nhpr.giftplans.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tonight, President Trump will address a joint session of Congress in the House chamber of the Capitol. And tomorrow on our show, we'll follow up on his speech. So that's tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, does the country need a new national strategy on pain management? A federal task force has been taking comments and reviewing what we know and what we don't know about what really works and barriers to better treatment. Let's hear from you on this topic. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We've been talking to several people deeply involved in this issue this hour. Joining me in studio is Dr. David Nagel, a physiatrist and pain management specialist practicing in Concord, author of the book Needless Suffering, How Society Fails Those with Chronic Pain. And Dr. Nagel, before we go back to our listeners, I thought it was really interesting to hear from Dr. Seidner at the Hartford Insurance Company, a very comprehensive approach toward pain management. I'm kind of fascinated by this idea of each person gets a health coach to kind of say, you know, stick with it. So I just wonder what you think.
I wanted to build on that because in the rehabilitation model, if you look at outcomes in rehab, doesn't matter what you're rehabbing from. It could be addiction, mental health. It could be a stroke, a spinal cord injury. But a lot of success is dependent upon the environment in which you are rehabbing. So, for example, if you have a rotten family support at home, you have no friends, your employer is screaming at you all the time, you're not going to do well, period. And by having a coach like he's mentioning and having engaging family support, which is critical, you dramatically improve people's outcome rates. And that's really important. And the fact that he's mentioning from an insurance company that they're providing an advocate for somebody, because we would like to think your doctor is your advocate, but a lot of times they're not.
Well, and they're seeing, what, 3-4 patients an hour? I mean,
well, more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, now the
really?
Average.
Wow.
Well, I just saw a statistic. The average patient visit is 17 minutes. And I'm hearing patients that are getting 2-3 minute appointments. And, you know, it is insane. And I kind of wanted to segue into something else if I could. But, you know, we've been focusing so far between Dr. Collins, Dr. Seidner, and me on musculoskeletal pain. The nice thing about doing what I've been doing is I've traveled all of the United States, talked to people from all sorts of backgrounds with all kinds of pain. And musculoskeletal pain, yeah, it's probably the most common pain, but it's not the only pain. There's lots of others, like
all,
you know,
sorts of conditions.
Phantom pains, post-hysterectomy pains. I work with the Marfan Society, the types of pains they get from aortic dissections to, you know, other musculoskeletal pains, sickle cell disease, the types of pain they get, you know, so on and so forth. Chronic headache, that's not really a musculoskeletal pain. And it doesn't mean that some of these therapies that we're talking about don't have value. You know, they might, but we're looking at a lot bigger picture than just people with back pain. And I'm not, you know, minimizing their suffering, but we're looking at a huge population. And that's what this report is looking at, is not just musculoskeletal pain, but the entire framework from acute to chronic to end of life.
Well, something that came up with both our call outs this morning to Dr. Collins, again, the pain specialist at Grant State Pain Associates, very focused on physical and mm-hmm. movement. And then Dr. Seidner at the Hartford, just this more holistic approach and looking at the data behind it. Both of them though, did talk also about, for lack of a better word, buy-in from patients. So you and I have talked about, you know, gee, it's too bad insurers don't cover this more holistically. Gee, it's too bad doctors don't look at this more holistically. Gee, it's too bad doctors don't coordinate more with physical therapists or acupuncturists. But those two doctors also seem to say sometimes they struggle to get patients to buy into this, that people in pain, and it's hard when you're in pain. Listen, when you're in pain, you want to do anything except be out of pain. But that people with pain also need to invest in these therapies that aren't a quick fix.
Yeah. And I mean, you always have in life, you always look at short term and long term strategies. And that's kind of what Dr. Collins was getting at. You know, I need to make your pain feel better now, but this is a short term thing. How do we make things better in the long term in multiple ways? So you have to have both short and long term strategies, whether you're in business school, whatever. That's how we do things. Buy-in is a challenge. The guy from the NFL I was talking to yesterday, you know, one of the therapies that he does that he found very helpful, he thought was really hokey and weird and all this, but they talked him into doing it and it worked. So, you know, it's like going to the buffet table. You know, you might look at that snail thing there and that doesn't look so good, but you know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't try it because you might like it, like Mikey from the Life cereal. Commercial.
The problem, and I hear you on the buffet, and this draft report lays a very expansive buffet.
They do and they don't, but yeah.
But, you know, my time is limited.
Right.
My money is limited. It takes a lot of time to run around to all these different appointments and check things out. You know, I mean, I'm basically healthy, but I myself have had, you know, I've had neck pain and back pain, you know, your average sort of, you know, middle-aged athlete stuff. And, you know, some of the stuff works and some of it doesn't. And some of it's extremely expensive, and insurance kind of sort of covers it, but not really.
Yeah. I mean, it's an issue. And
the NFL guy, sure, you know, he's got all the money in the world. He can afford the buffet.
You are totally,
most of us cannot.
You are totally correct. And I think that's where the challenge gets to be, and it is a big challenge. The next question is, well, how do you improve access for these things? And, I mean, I have my thoughts. It's in my book, and I know a lot of people probably won't like what I have to say, but we pour money into things that clearly don't work, that are very harmful to people, and pay those people a lot of money.
Like back surgery, for example.
I wasn't going to say anything in specific.
It's not shown to be that effective all the time?
Well, it isn't for degenerative spine. And for herniated disc, it probably has some benefit for short, intermediate range.
So it depends.
Long-term, no. But you know, we spend a lot of money in the United States on that. And, you know, what about diverting money from something that's not shown to be helpful to these other things that are low cost, low risk, low expensive? And how do you do that? You have to change an entire healthcare system.
Well, on that point, let's bring into our conversation now Kate Berry. She's Senior Vice President of Clinical Affairs and Strategic Partnerships at America's Health Insurance Plans. That's a national association representing health insurers and healthcare service providers. And Kate, we sure do appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, we've been talking about this big, big federal draft, national pain strategy. I'm sure you're familiar with it, Kate. The broad idea is we're not dealing with pain very well right now. Doctors don't have enough time to think about what might work. Patients can't afford alternatives that a doctor might offer beyond a pill. I just wonder what you think, Kate, in terms of how health insurers are viewing pain management today.
Yeah, I mean, first I would just like to say that health insurance plans are really taking a comprehensive approach to addressing the opioid crisis, which is, of course, having a major impact nationally and in certain communities like New Hampshire. So plans really focus on prevention, so reducing unnecessary opioid prescribing, encouraging non-opioid pain treatments as a first-line approach, as well as early intervention, kind of reaching out to people, both physicians as well as patients who may be at risk, and intervening early before they may become addicted to opioids, and then, of course, making sure that they have access to substance use disorder treatment and recovery support. In terms of pain approaches.
Yeah, what are the trends in health insurance these days versus maybe 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think that insurance providers are increasingly prioritizing non-opioid, non-drug pain management therapies as the first line of treatment. Obviously, as some of the speakers have already said, I mean, people experience pain differently. It may be acute and short-term after an injury or after a medical procedure, or it may be intermittent or just happen once in a while, or it may be ongoing. So people may have multiple different chronic conditions that impact the type of care that they may need, and they may really need a multidisciplinary approach to that pain. And that's why pain can be difficult to assess, to diagnose, and to treat.
There's no one-size-fits-all
approach. So things like exercise, mind-body interventions, psychological interventions such as cognitive behavioral therapy, which can help people kind of develop tools to manage their conditions, physical therapy, massage, chiropractic care, acupuncture. All of these types of different treatments can be very effective before moving to opioids, which may indeed be necessary sometimes, but in those cases should be prescribed at the lowest possible dosage and shortest duration. But things like ibuprofen can be just as effective for many people with much less risk.
You hear a lot more about that now. I'm interested in what you're saying, Kate, about physical therapy, massage, cognitive behavioral therapy, and that's definitely where this draft report is really interesting. But in many instances, insurance doesn't cover chiropractic care. I can't think of any insurance that covers massage. Sometimes physical therapy is covered, but the copays are huge. So to your average person, it doesn't really feel covered if you have to pay $50 a pop twice a week. So, I hear you on encouraging non-opioid pain relief, but I wonder, where the dollars are these days in terms of your average person's insurance coverage.
Well, it does depend. Obviously, there's different types of insurance, Medicare Advantage, Medicaid Managed Care, employer-sponsored commercial insurance. And, sort of the coverage is going to depend on lots of different factors. And we all know there's been trends to higher deductibles and so on, more out-of-pocket costs. That's been decades in the making. But there are actually just last fall, Johns Hopkins researchers produced a report that took a comprehensive look at what insurance providers are covering in terms of some of these other therapies. And they found that there is actually near universal coverage of physical and occupational therapy. Chiropractic care is also frequently covered. And the report also showed that health insurance providers are indeed undertaking strategies to expand access to non-pharmacy therapies and moving in that direction. So I do think, to some of the comments earlier, we need to help physicians be able to help their patients. We need to support a dialogue between physicians and patients to understand that while it may be much easier to just go to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription and take a pill, that may not be the best approach for a patient, really. It may be better to take a few visits to a physical therapist. It may be better to have chiropractic care for certain types of conditions, right? I think, pain is complex. There's no easy answers. But I do think that the dialogue and the decision-making, the shared decision-making between the physician and the patient to really better understand, basically all the whole person's situation.
They may have other
chronic conditions. They may have some mental health issues. They may have some other risks for substance use disorder. So it may be much, much better to have a broader view at what types of care may best help them manage their pain. And maybe the expectation of being completely pain-free isn't ideal. Maybe we need to be thinking about how do we improve function? How do we improve comfort? How do we improve the ability to move around and do the usual day-to-day activities that we all want to be able to do, for example?
Well, and the draft definitely talks about that comprehensive approach. And a couple of the barriers that it talks towards that approach, which everybody these days seems to be on board, is one is, again, as we've discussed, some of these alternatives are covered, but maybe, if I could call it, covered in name only. Again, a $50, $75 copay doesn't feel like coverage to the average person. The other thing is, though, doctors feel like they can't take this comprehensive approach because they're under pressure to see, four or five patients an hour. And I just wonder, Kate, if insurers really are buying into this, are there areas where insurers can take steps to give docs the time to better cover some of these alternatives if we really don't want people just taking pills?
Well, I think
what's your role in this?
Yeah, so health insurance providers are definitely, we've actually been working closely, you know, with our health plan members as well as a number of specialty societies to really think through, you know, what's the landscape for pain care? What are some of the big challenges? And I think that, you know, there are a lot of them. So if most pain presents in a primary care practice who are, you know, very, very busy, and, you know, may be perfectly accustomed to treating people with complex conditions, but they may not exactly know when and where to refer a patient to a chiropractor, for example, or when and where and why or how often to refer to acupuncturists. So I think that kind of helping the primary care practices understand, you know, what some of the other allied health professionals who may be appropriate to care for their patients under some circumstances, and for those people with very complex conditions. Certainly, there are specialists, pain specialists. I'm on the call already, or on the show already, who, you know, have a more specialist-oriented approach and a multidisciplinary approach to making sure that people have the best possible treatment plan available to them.
Well, and that's definitely the word that keeps showing up in this draft report: multidisciplinary. Kate, we're going to have to pick up on this conversation another time. There's so much more I could talk to you about, but I will let you go for now, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Kate Berry, Senior Vice President of Clinical Affairs at America's Health Insurance Plans. Wow, Dr. Nagel, we have just about a minute left, and she kind of ended where I think you might want to talk, multidisciplinary, you know, making the point that maybe a general practitioner doesn't know how to approve someone for acupuncture.
We have a minute left total.
Yes.
Oh, great. Can I just tell my story real
Absolutely.
Quick? All right. The main reason I wanted to be in this show today was to empower people out there in pain that you can be part of the solution. This draft is in draft form. There is a guy, John. I know he's an African-American with sickle cell disease. There's a whole section on sickle cell disease in this draft. It is only there because John, a local contractor in Kansas City, Missouri, was able to get on this committee as the sole, at the time, was the sole layperson and make a difference.
Wow.
So you can go to hhs.gov, download this report, review it, and you can share your thoughts about it or get involved with any organization. If you're in pain, go to the U.S. Pain Foundation. You can get involved through them and a number of other organizations. So you can be part of the process. You don't have to sit back and take it. That's the point.
So your story about John is encouraging folks to, you know, this is a draft report.
He's
They're
a friend of mine.
He's public comments.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man.
And, jump in.
Yeah, I mean, he had sickle cell is a horrible disease, and doctors treat them very poorly. And he had an opportunity once to confront a doctor.
All right. We also have a link on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, so folks can find the report there. We'll talk again, Dr. Nagel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.